You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Yeah. Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 1, Episode 10 of Cawley's Call, kindly sponsored by Benetti Menswear, and without them, we wouldn't be here. So a massive thank you goes out to them. Also, a huge thank you, actually, we haven't done this before, but a big thanks to everybody that tunes in and listens every week, because last week there was a big reaction, Stu, and seems to be going down well, the podcast. So we're very grateful for the people who are tuning in and listening and subscribing and doing all those modern podcasty things that you do nowadays. And also, if you want to leave a review or comments or anything like that, whatever you do, that'd be more than appreciated as well. Stewie, it's good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you, Al. Yeah.
Yeah. John, how are you?
Good, Alan. How are you?
Good. And as I said last week, we only have the select few who are coming into the studio with us, and no greater than the man himself, Mr. Tony O'Donoghue, who is with us tonight. Tony, how are you?
Well, I reckon if you can get on the Brendan O'Connor show, I can get on your podcast, you know.
There's hope for us all, isn't there, Tony? There's hope for us all. It's good to see you.
Thank you very much. Good to see you guys.
Good stuff. And thanks for being with us tonight. We're more than grateful. Obviously, we're all good friends around the table here, but we're the most important thing, I suppose, that we wanted to talk to you about, Tony, is you've been covering Irish football for a long, long time at this stage, and you've seen managers come and go, new and old, new regimes, old regimes, whatever you may like. Obviously, there's somebody who's very close to our League of Ireland hearts in charge of the team at the moment, and it was his first week in charge, and obviously you were at close quarters to see that as well. Just assess the week for us that's been for Stephen Kenny.
I think everything went quite well apart from the football.
Should we start again, Tony?
I mean, look, there was a huge wave of positivity, and rightly so, to Stephen Kenny coming into the job. He might have, you know, given himself a hostage to fortune by the fact that he talked it up, what he wanted to achieve. But if you have to start second guessing yourself all the way along the line, he even admitted as much that maybe he was too honest. Mm. But he gave the impression that there was going to be a change of style. He gave the impression that we were going to, you know, shake off the mantle of British style, you know, up and at 'em sort of team, because every manager does seem to talk about just our strength and our physicality and the long ball. Mm. And he wanted us to become a nation of more technical players. But that's not going to happen quickly, and it certainly hasn't happened over these two games. But everything deserves a context, and I think it's really important that what happened regarding the pandemic has to be at the very beginning of this. You've got players who are coming into an international camp when they haven't had their pre-season done yet. Mm-hmm. They finished their previous season in the most extraordinary circumstances. The season was stopped, then started again behind closed doors. You know, players, some of them moving to other clubs. I can imagine, for example, the likes of Matt Doherty. He's just been on his holidays. Then he goes and signs for Tottenham. He goes over, meets Tottenham, does the video stuff, signing the shirt, all of that. And then he's whisked over to Ireland. His head must be in a spin. Equally with Shane Duffy. He just joined Celtic. He hasn't been playing for such a long time. So there are all these other factors that have come into it. But in terms of the training, Stephen made the right noises in terms of press conferences. They had a bubble that they had to contend with. They couldn't actually physically meet the media, had to be kept away, had to travel to a country that wasn't on the green list, had to get an exemption. And then we come to the football. And I thought it was very brave that Stephen started out his regime by dropping his captain. A bit awkward that, you know, Coleman was next to him the night before the game in Sofia, as the captain generally does in the night before a press conference, when they must have both known at that stage that Seamus wasn't going to start. In fact, he had no game time in the two matches. That he changed his midfield entirely for the second game was a ballsy call as well. And look, I think the Nations League, we all know, it's more important than friendlies, but it's not as important as the Slovakia playoff. Mm. It's not as important as a European qualifier or World Cup qualifier. So he's experimenting, and he's said as much. But the football was disappointing. I think there's reasons for that. Us being out of season, the COVID situation. And now let's get to the heart of it. what's the best way for Ireland to play. He wants to play 4-3-3, it seems. Whether that's going to work for Ireland in the long term remains to be seen. But when we have the Doherty-Stevens situation, who are wing-backs at their clubs and haven't been effective in the back four that we've seen in the last two games. In fact, they've been the opposite. They've been ineffective. Mm. And the Duffy-Egan situation is a problem for now. Now, when everybody is a bit more match fit and when the stakes are higher against Slovakia, hopefully we'll see an improvement. But 30-odd days, 31 days to go, Stephen may not even be able to go over and see matches still in the flesh. So it really depends. International football is so different from club football. How many games our top players can get in? They need game time. They need to be sharper. And then the big decision is what style and what system is Stephen going to play?
That's the point, Tony. And you mentioned there the amount of contributing factors, I suppose, outside of this game and outside of this meet-up, if you like, in this week. And normally there's always contributing factors, whether it be injuries, suspensions to games. But there was an awful amount leading up to this game. And as you said, the amount of season, pre-season, all this kind of stuff. Stephen not meeting the players before, on Zoom calls, conversations over the phone. So all that kind of stuff. But the crux of it that we're all kind of, and I couldn't believe, I was really annoyed, and I'm going to get to it in a wee while, but I was really annoyed about the reaction last night to the performance and the game in general and the week, what we've seen. Because we've all asked in some way that we would see a culture change or see a change of philosophy in terms of football over the years because of what we watched under Trapattoni, under Martin O'Neill. And I include Mick McCarthy in his second stint last year. I felt it was really, really poor stuff, not his first stint years ago. So we've all asked for that. Here he is a week into his job. He's only had 3 or 4 training sessions. He's trying to put his philosophy across, his messages, his print on things. And for the reaction to be as bad as it was last night, it really, really annoyed me. But the cultural change, and you mentioned it there a couple of times about the style that we're trying to play, he's fully entitled and he's fully right to try this, is he not?
Absolutely. And you asked me about being around the squad. And yeah, my experience goes back to the end of the Charlton day. So I've seen quite a few managers in and out the door and quite a few training sessions from Clonshock all the way through to Malahide and out to Abbottstown now.
Do you still love it as much?
Of course I do, yeah. I mean, what a wonderful opportunity to get to see players and managers and systems up close. And in terms of the New Ireland one, yeah, I mean, it was good to see the way, as much as we were allowed to see, usually just 15 or 20 minutes or so at the start, but just even the way that they're arranging that. So there's a whole new coaching team. The backroom team is all different. So you've got Damien Duff and Keith Andrews, obviously. You've got Damien Doyle. You've got Rory Higgins. Alan Kelly, the goalkeeping coach, has been in there in the past. But the way in which they organise themselves, the fitness routines, even, and lucky enough to have been in the stadium yesterday, as Stewie was, and not too many people get to see that, just even watching the warm-ups and see how intensive they were and how, I suppose, specialised they were for each unit of the team. You'd have to think, that going forward is the right way to go about it. Now, it's not simply a manager like Jack and Maurice Setter is maybe, you know, carrying the coats. This is a very scientific approach to how every player and their load is managed. And that's one of the reasons that we didn't see James McCarthy, for example, take the field any time yesterday.
It's a modern-day approach.
It is. And from what I've seen, it was extremely professional and catered for each player and each unit of the team. So that is encouraging. That's one of the biggest changes over the years.
Stewie, you were there, as Tony said, and you covered the game Thursday night as well. I suppose looking back on the last 5 or 6 days and Stephen and the build-up to the game, what we've watched, your assessment overall?
Yeah, I wouldn't be as hysterical as some of the others have been. You take the two games into consideration, which is important and you have to do. I think we've a lot to work on, but I think we're going in the right direction. I liked what we're trying to do. I think if you possibly separate the two games, the Bulgaria game, I thought we were very good. I have to say, I thought we were very good away from home. They weren't an exceptional Bulgarian team. We know that. But I really liked how we moved the ball and the opportunities that we created in the game. We could have had a couple at least before Bulgaria did undo us. But when you look at the goal they scored, it was very much down to two experienced defenders switching off in what should have been a no danger situation. It was nothing to do with a system or the way we're being asked to play. It was just you know, a mistake by two very experienced defenders, which both the guys acknowledged.
Because if you look back on the goal show, I'm glad you mentioned that, and there's all the talk of pre-season and fellas just not being sharp. We know what it's like to be in pre-season, out of pre-season, and it, getting up to speed in terms of your 5-6 matches before you feel like that. Duffy, when he actually goes out to cover the lad who made the run down the right-hand side, when he realises the ball then comes inside, if you look at him, he puts the head down and thinks, okay, the danger's gone for a minute, I'll have a minute to run inside. Before he knows that pass is made and he's out of position. And that's the split second in terms of fitness and the level that you're playing at.
Yeah, and at the same time, Egan should be narrowing in immediately. As soon as his partner advances forward, he needs to come right in. So there's literally a straight line between him and Duffy. And if he does that, he's cutting out that ball. Mm. And likewise, Enda Stevens needs to come in as well. So I just think that's something you can certainly work on. And then, you know, look, we got the goal from a set piece. That's granted. I've no issue with that. You look at the game yesterday, it nearly happened again with Pukki getting in, where they both got caught centrally. Again, from a situation that was very easily manageable and nothing to do with the system, basically to do with, defenders just getting their wires crossed a little bit. You know, yesterday's game, I have a bit of an issue with, and the reason I have an issue with it is because I felt we were just too dependent on the system. You know, we were a bit too much focused on trying to play and getting the ball out from the back, and, you know.
So you're saying we could mix it up a bit more?
What the problem was, it became very obvious to me in the game yesterday that Robert Taylor was killing us. Mm. Absolutely killing us. And it was just old-fashioned. He was just finding pockets in behind Arthur. He was causing all sorts of troubles, making runs in behind our back four. I just think it was very obvious stuff. So somebody needed to, on the pitch, to say, look, you need to go and pick him up and mark him. Ultimately, he ended up being the catalyst for the goal. He's gotten in behind. Mm. If you look at the goal again, he's gotten in behind. I think it was Duffy.
He's after getting a move. He's with Brann now. He's played 16 times, I think, already this season. He was second division in Norway last year with Tromsø or someone, but he played very well on the day. The point I'm bringing that up, Stu, because there was two lads playing for HJK Helsinki, the right full, Ayala, I think his name, or Ayola, and O'Shaughnessy, funny enough, the Irish name lad that played centre half. They're playing domestic football at home. The stuff that Stephen is trying to, impose here on the players and get the message across. The reason I was so annoyed last night, and the reason why I'm all for this change as such, without being kind of naive, I did think Stephen was naive in a couple of instances during the game that he learned from this, I think. But just the overall picture in terms of the change and what he's trying to achieve. We've qualified for two tournaments since 2002. It's the equivalent of us for what we've done for the last 15, 20 years of going up to that wall and just banging our head off a brick wall, going nowhere. We've been left behind. You look at Finland, who were 58 in the world yesterday, and they passed the ball as good as most. Very, very comfortable in possession, all of them. Passed the ball really well. Passed the ball far better than what we did. If we carried on for what we've been doing over the last 15, 20 years, we'll go nowhere.
Yeah,
and we'll be even worse off than what.
I completely agree. I think we, you know, the time is now to change. And I think do you know what? I actually think the experienced Ireland players are going to be the lads that are going to have more of a problem with this.
Well, all the narrative around it, Tony, is Duffy's the one who's struggling at the moment. He struggled at club level with Brighton because Potter wants to play that style of football. The question is now, he got caught out a couple of times on the ball in Bulgaria. I'll allow for the fact that he's not fit and he looks like a lad who has a lot on his plate in terms of his personal stuff earlier on in the summer and the big move with Celtic, and there's probably a lot going on in his head at the moment. He will get fit, and he acknowledged, he was very honest enough to say, I was at fault for the goal. He also acknowledged, I need to get better with the new manager in terms of the way he wants to play and on the ball.
He's still our best goal threat, I'm afraid, which shouldn't be really, you know. I don't want to burst that bubble.
But isn't that another point, Tony, that we can still implement Stephen's style, but we can still not take away from all the good stuff that we've had from other managers as well?
But the alarm bells have to ring nonetheless, because Finland ranked 58th, Bulgaria ranked 59th, Ireland ranked 34th, I think. Bulgaria, we beat them easily in a friendly last year.
I don't think alarm bells are ringing just yet.
We'll talk about that, because I know you want to get onto that, and I don't even really want to talk about social media in this context, because I think it's a cesspool, and I think it's nonsense to be even taking too much thought of what goes out there. Some people are doing that just to get a reaction, but nonetheless, it is important to consider that we need to be playing better against teams that are ranked around us. If League B isn't our ranking, and we're going to get relegated out of this Nations League, we're going to have less people coming to matches. I mean, let's be honest, the Slovakia game we're all talking about, right? But when we play Bulgaria at home in November, if crowds were to be allowed back, and if, heaven forbid, if we're beaten by Slovakia in the Euro playoff, and we come around to November, and let's say there was even cup price tickets, how many people do you think are going to rock up to Lansdowne Road of a Wednesday evening?
But this is the stuff we need to get away from, Tony. I think there needs to be some, there might be some short-term pain for long-term gain. And I think that's, I'm not saying it's acceptable to be losing matches by any means whatsoever, but because we're trying to implement change here and we're all aware of that and we all know, and that's not to give Stephen a free pass by any means. I think he was more annoyed than anybody that we lost the match yesterday. But we have to temper a little bit of that criticism in terms of if we're trying to change for the better going forward for some sort of sustainability long-term, do we not allow for that?
Oh, absolutely you do, yeah. But nonetheless, the engine of the Football Association of Ireland is the international team. Again, we'll say this has been an extraordinary year, but if the team isn't in the public consciousness, isn't loved by the Irish nation, and that's really significant, we don't have, we're, you know, this week is very important in the FAI because it's the week that the interviews for the new CEO are ongoing, and who becomes the new CEO is really important because massive income needs to be generated, and ASAP. As we know, they've had to be bailed out as an organisation and they're in trouble financially. And if the team isn't doing well...
But I don't think you can pin that. You can pin those financial issues this is on the Stephen.
No.
In terms of you have to get the results now because we're in
it's
trouble.
It's so important that the Ireland team is loved by the Irish nation, that they do well enough to be in the hearts of the Irish nation. Because let's be honest, GAA and rugby in particular, I think, has wiped the eye of football in terms of sponsorship and in terms of
you
know, income. But
do you know why they've wiped the eye? Do you know why they've wiped the eye? Because people are fed up
because
with the
rubbish
that we've watched for the last 15, 20 years.
I agree. I genuinely was kind of touched on this yesterday. Like I'm quite taken aback by how educated spectators are on the game now. You know, like, I mean, I sometimes don't you'd wonder why they need experts in to analyse the game because, to be fair, you know, people who watch the game and go to the game are very well read on the game. They're very well informed on the game because they're listening to shows like this and they're watching TV programmes. But I do think the Irish support, the public, they want to see, they know what they're looking at. They want to see intent in how we play football. Now, look, I'm not going to say, look, if you don't win games, it is going to become a problem. There's no doubt about it.
It's like, always been the case for any Ireland manager.
Absolutely.
And that includes Jack Charlton. You know, there was small crowds when he started off as well. And maybe you could say there's a lot of bandwagoners jumped on the Irish football team after a bit of success came our way in extraordinary times. And yet, no matter who you are, of course I want Stephen Kenny to be given time. And of course I want this Irish team to develop and play better football. But there is an absolute requirement that they be loved by the nation, that tickets are sold, that sponsorship can be brought on the back of it, because it is the engine that drives all of the rest of the football in this country.
John, we're not forgetting you, John. Sorry. This is how passionate it gets, John. This is how passionate it gets. And I'm loving it. John, what do you think of the whole week in general in terms of Stephen, the stuff that Tony has said, the latest bit there about the results and the finances and stuff like that? And again, he's only 7 days into his reign here.
I think Tony's kind of hit every note correctly there, I suppose.
Ye Cork, look at the Cork fellas sticking together. If the Cork people ever say that, I'm hard on Cork people. And here I have two of the finest on.
You're just short of saying bye.
I'm from Kerry.
I know that, but you're a Cork City diehard.
I know. Look, I suppose the thing is, like, I don't take Twitter too seriously, but there's people that are very vocal about it. But you can ignore them, but you kind of have to be objective as well and not be overprotective of Stephen Kenny just because, as League of Ireland fans, we want him to do well. But I think the lead up to the game, like Tony said, the sound bites in the media, the way he presented himself, I'm really impressed there by what Tony was saying about the preparation, about the mood around the players, the intent, the intensity and the preparation of it into the training. That's all great to hear. But he's right also that Stephen, like it or not, will be under pressure because, like, Slovakia, for as important a game as it is to us, they were awful against the Czech Republic at the weekend. And they're not actually that good a side. So there will be an expectation, even though it's not... I don't think Mick McCarthy would be in a better boat at the moment, given all the context that Tony kind of delved into there. But I think there's going to be an expectation either that we should be beating Slovakia.
But on that, John, and I've heard people yesterday, if Mick McCarthy was in charge, we might have 6 points on the board, right? Do people not remember that Mick McCarthy was in charge and the campaign was horrendous last year and we only won three matches? Two of them were against Gibraltar, one was against Georgia. And we wouldn't have won that
if it wasn't for the tennis balls.
And the campaign was dreadful, Tony. Like, dreadful. And I had people yesterday saying this. I was in a WhatsApp group of friends of mine. Oh, if Mick McCarthy was the manager, 6 points on the board.
What are you doing reading that stuff for?
Well, yeah.
But we would.
I'm going to write a song for you.
Look, there was no, like, the positives about it, and Stewie touched on it, is that, especially in Bulgaria, we played very well, moved the ball around nicely, and you can see what Stephen's trying to do. There are some valid criticisms about the way it was set up. I think if you're going to play Stevens and Doherty, you have to let them overlap, and there wasn't any sign of that. And I don't think, in the absence of a strong number six who's going to sit in front of the defence, I don't think Stephen Kenny's going to be comfortable with them being that far over the place until, especially with like the obvious, or what seems to be an obvious issue between Egan and Duffy and getting them settled in. That'll come with fitness, that'll come with games played. But one thing I would say though is, and I agree with Stewie about the Finland game, we played nice football, but there did seem to be an over-reliance on the system. And I think the problem you have with the system, it doesn't matter whether it's Stephen's system or it's going back as far as Jack Charlton. Jack Charlton's system shut down innovation and creativity. Like, there was all these conversations way back in the 80s, early 90s about his use of Liam Brady and Dave O'Leary. And what I, like, outside of Harry Arthur yesterday, I just didn't see a mass amount of creativity. Now, whether that's because of the system or that's because players they looked a bit lethargic, maybe because they're not in pre-season yet. Maybe, like, look in the context of COVID and the all the travelling and being in a bubble, you're back in Ireland, you can't see your family and friends because they can't come and visit you. I thought that the positives outweigh the negatives, but there's no point being blind to what was negative either, because then you're not really doing anyone a service.
No, and I'm glad you said that, John, and you mentioned the word there a couple of moments ago, being overprotective of Stephen Kenny because we're League of Ireland. Like, I am not overprotective of Stephen Kenny and I never will be overprotective. I want to see him do well, but if this was 6 months down the line and we watched what we've seen the last two games, absolutely I'd be critical. But you have to temper in the fact that four training sessions, a week together, you mentioned creativity and the way we play. All that will come, and I've no doubt it will come, when the boys are up to speed and up to pace. But as you say, if it's 6 months down the line, and this is what we're getting, absolutely be critical.
I wouldn't be rash enough, though, to say we should be beating Slovakia. I mean, no matter what their performance against the Czech Republic, mm-hmm. I think they're playing later tonight as well, we'd have to accept the fact that we're the away team. And maybe I've learned this conservatism from hanging around too many Ireland managers for too long. But I think we have to stay in the game as long as we can to keep the game alive.
Maybe
for
that's
us.
Where the expectation needs to be tempered as well.
I think we have to look at it differently. And, you know, if we're going to play, people are going to look at Ireland now in a different way. If Slovakia are looking at our last two games under Stephen Kenny and they're going, these guys are trying to play it around, but they've no great penetration. Let them have the ball.
Mm-hmm. That's what Finland did. See, Finland had a look at us. They knew going into this game, they had a look at us. And that was the other issue we had yesterday. We were going into a game where the opposition knew how we played, you know, and they had a bit of difficulty with that as well. You see the Ireland team, they were a little bit bereft of ideas. They were kind of thinking themselves, we're kind of being...
They're allowing us play here.
And they struggled with that. Now, I do think they will improve for that. The one thing,
but again, isn't that just an adjustment, Stuart, to the players realising this as well and the responsibilities now that they have, whereas before that group would have all gone out with defensive structure, well organised, little or no ball. It's a flip-flop for them now.
It comes down to one very simple thing, a very basic rule of football as a player. The system is only a guide. Mm. You have to manage your game in that 90 minutes. You can't, if certain things happen in the game, you have to react to that. Mm. It's really simple. Like,
100%,
you know. So Pukki, Taylor causes all sorts of troubles yesterday. All it needed was Duffy to say, listen, go and mark him for 10 minutes or you need to track him for 10 minutes, he's killing us. Like, you know, Taylor had a cigar for the game yesterday.
And I'm glad you brought that up too, because another bit of criticism, Tony, is around, and Stewie played centre midfield, that's the position I played as well, and we've a little bit of an understanding of it, but McCarthy on Thursday night and obviously Harry Arter yesterday. I was critical of McCarthy the other night because if Stephen wants to play this possession-based game, which obviously he wants that, you need a player sitting in front of the back four who's going to make himself available, want to get on the ball, demand the ball. I never seen that from McCarthy. And I suppose the question mark from people is, have we ever seen it before from McCarthy? Stephen, from listening to him and speaking to him, he fully believes McCarthy can play this role. Then with Harry Arter yesterday, he's a bit better at getting on it. But he's not as good defensively, I don't think. And he doesn't have an understanding. He's a bit more ill-disciplined, running around, tearing around. And he doesn't sit in front of the back four the way McCarthy would. Where I felt Stephen might have been a bit naive, and this might, and it could have been a good thing that we've seen this in the last two games going forward, it might serve us better because we're not as good, even though Stephen might disagree with us now, but he might realise it after the two games. We're not as good as the teams that keep possession so well that will allow you to have just one sitting in front of the back four. He might need to change that to have two sitting in front of the back four, play with a three in front of them and maybe one up top and let them go and express themselves just to give us that more, a bit more protection, because I felt we were far too open in the games when we lost the ball.
Do you remember Trapattoni? And you remember one of the phrases he used to have was personality. And I think it was in particular about James McCarthy that he was looking for him to show more personality on the field. And that's what we need. He seems a very quiet chap anyway. He hasn't been involved in the Irish scene for 4 years. So you can't expect him to come in and suddenly be the general in the middle there barking out orders and telling people where to go. Harry Arter is only just back in the scene as well and he left under a cloud. So who are the leaders? Who are the personalities? And I think
it's a problem area, isn't it?
We need to allow them to develop, and that's one thing that Stephen and the rest of the guys have to allow. Who's going to be the mainstay of our team? Is going to be in it all the time. Who we can look to for? And it's the lack of a Seamus Coleman in the team, I suppose, because he has fulfilled that role over the years. So yeah, a lot of questions for Stephen Kenny. The thing is, though, I think he's a very intelligent man and I think he's going to look at this calmly. He'll do an awful lot of work between now and then, but it's something to remember. International football is so different to club football, in particular in these times. He will only have, again, what, two training sessions and a flight to Bratislava? And one training session in the stadium
But on top of that, Tony, he will have learned so much from these two games.
Oh, absolutely.
He'll have a fitter team as well. I was actually quite, I don't know if you noticed on TV, because we were there at the game, I was quite taken aback at how exhausted we were. Four or five players hit the ground at the final whistle. I couldn't believe that.
Maybe those warm ups were too intricate.
I was actually quite taken aback by that. I really was. So I might have underestimated the fact that, and the Finland have apparently, at club level, they've a month ahead. Yeah, in terms of advance. So, I mean, you have to be honest and take that into consideration.
You guys have both played. You know the difference between on it, being fit and being
massive
match fit.
Yeah, but especially match sharpness. Yeah.
And then, like, to be fair to those lads who nowadays they look after them so well, but it's not a case of they've been on their holidays for 6 weeks and you come back. They haven't played in 3 or 4 months on top of being only in pre-season. So that's a big ask. Tony, I know you have to head off, so it's been an absolute pleasure for you to come in. Thanks a million.
I've enjoyed it, guys. I'll see you again, I hope.
Well, you'll be back. You'll be more than welcome. And the next time you come in, hopefully there'll be two or three maybe Ireland wins under our belt and it'll be all roses in the garden, Tony. Thank you. So yeah, Stu, was that really noticeable, just the fitness levels? Obviously, from us looking in on the television, you could see they were obviously tired, and 2 games in 3 days, as we keep pointing out, is difficult. And even though people might say, oh, well, they're professional players, the usual nonsense you might hear, it is a big ask. But for you in the ground, how noticeable was that? Just how, and the Aviva is a big pitch, Stu.
It is a big pitch, and the pitch actually looked, it's just the way we set up yesterday, we made the pitch big, you know, it looked really big. It became noticeable, I would say, about probably 15, 20 minutes into the second half. You could see Matt Doherty, he was flagging a little bit. He was getting quite tired. You know, we were making erratic decisions and, you know, you look at the likes of Hardy Arter and all, you could see he was trying to make things happen. Like, and to be fair to him, he did make things happen. He was the fresher of everybody having not played in the Bulgaria game.
He's getting a bit of stick, Stu, but I thought he did well.
Do you know what he did for me, which I quite liked, but unfortunately we didn't get a reaction from everyone else? He went and smashed somebody.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just need that, you know? And you could see he was just trying to get things going, you know? Now, look, I know, you know, there's an element of that as well that's a bit sort of, you don't need people going around smashing anybody. But look, he was trying to get a reaction. He was trying to get everybody else to follow in. And there was a couple of occasions where we had stopped pressing because we'd gotten tired. And he was trying to instigate that. He was closing down and he was trying to get everybody to react to him, and it just wasn't happening, you know. So for that reason, I'd have to give him credit, I'd have to say. And he kept going right till the end as well. Actually, you look at the last 5-10 minutes, he looked like he could get Carried something on. Out of the game. But you need everybody else to come in with you, you know. Mm. But yeah, I was really surprised at how tired we looked in the last 10-15 minutes. And then when the final whistle went, I mean, Duffy hit the deck. I think Arthur hit the deck. There was three or four others. I was shocked.
Were you the same, John? I felt Duffy was absolutely struggling out in his feet on Thursday night against Bulgaria. Watching him then again yesterday, even when the ball is played in behind him, how slow he is to turn. And that's going to be another issue for him in terms of if we're going to play this high line, which Stephen wants as well, in terms of us getting up the pitch and pressing in this kind of new way of playing. Like anything in behind, he's so vulnerable, John. Now, I would temper that a little bit with the fact that he's obviously not fit. He's a big lad. He might carry a bit more timber than some of the rest of them. And I think he's fully aware, from listening to him in the interviews, he's aware he needs to improve a lot.
But I mean, John Egan made a couple of last-ditch tackles yesterday. But I thought in the Bulgaria game it was more noticeable, funnily enough, when he probably should have had more energy, that the high line was something that we had the potential to be caught by. But look, I noticed the same with Stewie. I think Robbie Brady was another one that was out on his feet towards the end of the game. But look, again, go back to the context, like Tony said, the COVID, the length of time since they've played, the weird way the seasons have ended up, the fact not back in pre-season, the fact the Finnish had about a month's football on top of them. You know, all these things have to be taken into account. And look, they're going to work their socks off with their clubs over the next couple of weeks. You know, so that won't be an issue. I don't think.
And that's what really annoyed me. I have to say, I got really annoyed after the match yesterday. And it's not like me. And I should know better, as you said, Twitter and all that usual nonsense that goes on. But I just couldn't believe, Stu, the reaction in terms of, here we are. We've been going along with blinkers on for the last 25 years, right? We've qualified for a couple of tournaments, so be it, so what. It was great for a week or two. Then we come home with our tail between our legs getting knocked out. There's nothing ever built on, nothing ever capitalised on. The domestic game here is the reason the domestic game is the way it is at the moment, because we've never progressed anything in terms of the international scene where we should be. The standard of play and all that stuff. We have Finland 58 in the world, be able to pass the ball better than us. We have Georgia coming to the Aviva last year and passing us off the pitch, so-called minnows. So, like, we need to get our heads out of the sand here. And for people to think if we carried on for the next 10 years doing what we've been doing for the last 20 years, that it would be much better and far more improved. Like, there must be a way with the fairies, like. And I'm not saying Stephen is going to revolutionise football by any means, but I'd much rather try something and try and change something that's more sustainable and fail, rather than doing what we've been doing for the last 20 years and fail.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we have to look at it as well in a general rule that people are just frustrated anyway because of the current environment. It's very difficult for everybody, and obviously sport is a huge outlet for people to kind of maybe take them away from, you know, this everyday nonsense of what we're going through at the moment. I don't mean nonsense in that is, you know, in that way, but it's very difficult for everybody to kind of be cooped up at home. They've no real release. It's everyone just feels like there's a huge cloud over their heads at the moment. And sport has always been, and especially, you know, the Irish football team has always been a wonderful way of taking us away from what can be difficult times. Plus, it wasn't too, like, I mean, it was only a couple of months ago where we were celebrating the whole Jack Charlton era, 1990 and on. I think everybody was in great form.
They all thought
we were going to qualify again. But I think there will be an element of realization. I don't follow the social media stuff. I don't, and for that very reason, I don't. I can't figure it out anymore. It's just too many voices, too many. You know, too many people.
It's knee jerk rubbish
with things
isn't it,
to say. Yeah.
How you could make a judgment on anything after four training sessions and two games of with nobody in the crowd, like all the factors that we outlined, how you could come to any sort of conclusion or judgment after that.
But that's it. People have a voice, and that's the way they express their voice. Now, there's a very easy way to turn it off, you know, just get rid of that.
What are you trying to tell me here, Jim?
Get off social media, man. But, this COVID crisis has really brought up the whole dependent on social media. I mean, people are now starting to revert back to the more official ways of getting your news, like, because you don't know what's coming out, like, you know. So there's been much more. Well, I certainly feel there's been more of a reversion to official radio stations or the news channels to try and get, you know, kind of a more assured piece of information that's coming out, like, you know. So social media.
What you mean from Billy Boy John, 37? Does he not have all the information?
Billy Boy, yeah. But unfortunately that's the world we have at the moment. But there's a very easy way to get away from it. It's just turn it off.
Yeah, maybe that's the advice I should be taking on board, John, is it?
I think it is. No, okay. You take it too seriously, that's all.
I know, of course I'm passionate about the game. We all are, like, obviously we all care and all, and it's not that I've blinkers on for Stephen. Like, somebody replied back to me, oh, take off your blinkers or something. It's not that. Like, if Stephen, as I say, in 6 months' time, if they're struggling, I'll be the first one to say it. But I want to see him do it. If Jose Mourinho took over tomorrow, I'd want to see him do well, whoever, if he was. But the biggest thing that I'm probably more happy with, not that Stephen has taken over, but that he wants to make change. We need change so badly. We can't keep doing what we're doing with the managers that we've had for the last three. And high profile names, don't get me wrong, I'm not disrespecting them by any means, but we were going nowhere. With this short-term view of, oh, it's eight games and just qualify for a tournament and that's it. No bigger picture view, no long-term vision, no long-term plan about where we're going. So now Stephen is in place and there's continuity amongst all the managers. He's speaking to the 15s, Jason Donoghue, Paul Azam, 16s, Colin O'Brien, 17s, Andy Reid, 18s, Tom Owen, right up to Jim with the 21s, all of them. And that's what you need. Trapattoni didn't even know who the manager was under 17s or under 19s, or, you know, so that's the biggest thing that I'm, I suppose, more happy about, and that's why I want to see change, John.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And look, I suppose one thing, now, whatever you think about Rue Doctor and what's been done in school by football over the last 10, 15 years and Vancouverman's before him, the fact of the matter is, from under sixes, under sevens up, there's a player development plan there. And that is focused on setting out a particular style of play that's 4-3-3. And being able to adapt. That's what kids are coached up to the whole way up along. And you mentioned it there, Colin O'Brien, Tom Mohan, Jim Crawford, Andy Reid, Jason, all the lads, they're instilling, you know, that we're coaching kids right across the country. Every coach in Ireland at the moment is adopting a fairly similar process. Your kickstart coaching, your coaching badges. And again, like, whether you think that's the right system or the wrong system, the fact of the matter is that up until the last two games, we've always had a manager who was having kids developed up in a certain system, and then once they got to the very top flight, having to completely forget about how they played that. And these same kids are going, you know, the best of them are going across to the UK, or they're playing League of Ireland, and by and large are playing a game that's more controlled, more possession driven, more about technical quality rather than the up and at them. And while we love to see that, like every country out there is producing technically better players, and the kick and rush stuff, the long ball, while it looks great and gets everyone's heart pumping, and while it's easy to appreciate it from an effort level, we were being left behind, left behind, yeah. And we haven't been good. So like this thing, like Stephen on the top of the pyramid, that's long-term strategic, is exactly what was needed, and I think over time he'll deliver. I've actually no doubt about it at all.
Brilliant. Okay, so we leave the Ireland chat there because I need to calm down. The Shamrock Rovers Bohemians game, Stu, the biggest game of the weekend. I watched the match, wasn't the best game in the world, and funny enough, it's horrible when it clashed, I suppose, with the whole Ireland thing, because that overshadowed everything and all the emphasis was on that. And it was very quiet in the build-up. There was very little talk, considering it was such a big game. It's a big game anyway with the rivalry, but the fact that they were the top two and Bohemians only 2 points behind them going into it added even more significance onto it. it wasn't a great game. An early goal spoiled it a little bit. Bohemians then, to be fair, responded quite well, but I felt Shamrock Rovers were just happy to sit in. They were quite comfortable. Bohemians huffed and puffed, but even Keith Long said it afterwards, they never did quite enough. They never got Twardek or Grant, those really dangerous players, into the areas where they want to get them in to cause problems. And Stephen Bradley played lame scales actually to try and counter that, and it worked quite well with Grace and Pico Lopez as well. So a good day for Shamrock Rovers, but disappointed for Bohemians.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with most of what you said there, to be quite honest. The fact that these were only going to play each other once means there was a huge emphasis on the game, and Rovers getting the early goal meant really that all they had to do was keep possession, don't give Anton Silly away. Even the goal was sloppy, like, you know.
Desperate goal, wasn't it?
It was like something from a Benny Hill sketch, but, like, you know, you take them, don't you, at that stage. And then the lack of a crowd, I mean, these derbies, especially the Rovers and the Bows games, have been hugely influenced by the crowd, like, you know, and it does tend to be a huge factor. No crowd there, very quiet. I wonder, could Bowles have had a penalty maybe? I felt it was a penalty.
At least Danny Grant one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stonewall penalty.
And finding the referees are... just when there's no crowd and there's no intense atmosphere, the decisions are a little bit different.
So you're saying they're not being swayed by the crowd, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
That's what you said. But it's definitely an issue. Something I've definitely seen in some of the games that there's you know, tackles are being let go. The crowd does have a huge influence. No doubt about it. I mean, especially when as hostile an atmosphere as a Rovers and Bows game. But the reality was, for Rovers, once they scored early, they just had to do a job. They did the job. Bowes probably huffed and puffed a little bit, but I wonder if they had the penalty now, it would have made a huge difference.
It was at a time, to be fair, that we're on top, John, and I agree totally with Stewie. I felt it was a Stonewall penalty. I don't know how the ref or the linesman didn't actually get it right, to be honest. I thought it was blatant. And at that stage, you get the penalty, had they scored 1-1, all the momentum was with them. It could have been massively different.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, as much as Bowes were coming into it there, I still thought Rovers were quite comfortable throughout. And I thought Scales in particular was very good on the day, and looked brought in to do a job and did it very well. I still felt going through with that, Rovers probably had another gear. Now, whether they would have found it had Bowes gotten that penalty, which, look, I'd agree. I think either side, one in either half, were probably both penalties. But I whether they would have had enough to bounce back Rovers if Bowes had come back into it, I don't know. But look, I think it was disappointing for the league as a whole, because I think that 5-point gap now, probably that's the end of it, really. I think Rovers would want to have a monumental mess up or something bizarre happening on a European perspective where they go on a very extended run, which distracts them. But I think we're done now, really, in terms of the title, unfortunately.
That's sad, really, Stu, that we're
it
doing,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, and I agree. I can't... that no one's going to catch them. They'll be very surprised. And look, you think strange, you know, things can always happen in football, but I think from that point of view, knowing that there's 8 games to go, it's normally the other way around. You know, when you go into 8 games where people are, you know, that's always where the business end of the season is, and people start to really make a move, and the experienced teams that are out to win a league title, we talked about it before, they maintain a certain level while everybody drops away. I just don't see that happening this year. It's
Do you think the fact that they haven't won it in such a long time, there might be a little bit of added pressure that way? Or again, does it go back to there's no crowds? Who's going to put them under pressure, really?
Yeah, no crowds is a huge factor. Like, look, listen, you can only deal with the factors that are there. Like, you know, it's been difficult for everybody. And ultimately, Rovers have done their stuff. It's as simple as that. They are where they are because they've done their stuff and they played some excellent football. And it's been very, you know, it's not that long ago that Dundalk were dominating the league here. It's very difficult to crack that nut. Very, very difficult. And they've done it so far. Now I do think they will tighten up. There's no doubt about it. As these weeks go through, they'll get a little bit tighter as they get closer and closer. But they look to me like they have loads in the tank. They really do. Not playing particularly well in the last couple of weeks, as we know they can play. But let's hope they can up their standards when it comes to Europe. But the table itself, even when you look at it, it's just
And if Sligo Rovers win tonight, they're playing Finn Harps. If Sligo Rovers win tonight, it moves them up to third, I think it is. So it just goes to show you how tight it is.
Anyone can be pulled into that relegation zone. Yeah. Like, right up to fourth, yeah.
We'll get to them in a moment. But John, I suppose we do need to give Shamrock Rovers a lot of credit, because as Stewie said there, regardless of all the factors, and we can say what we want, they're the ones that have played the 10 games, they've won 8 and drawn 2 and lost none.
Oh yeah, look, we've said a couple of weeks back that we're probably not talking about them as much as Shamrock Rovers fans might be expecting, but
they they think all that's down to me, John. And you know what? They're right. No, I'm only messing.
I know, but they're just relentless at the moment. And like Stewie said, they haven't been playing great the last couple of weeks, and they're still 5 points clear with 8 games to go. They still looked comfortable against who were the form team in the league going into that game. Look, the quality players they have, they're just unbelievable. And I suppose the only thing is, will they take their eye off the small bit going into Europe, because that's such a big fish, and the buzz they'll get out of that and the different experience. Obviously, AC Milan's probably a tough one, but that might distract them a little bit. But look, they're just, like I said, relentless at the moment.
No, that's fair. And I know we were having a bit of a joke, but they are a very good team. Stephen Bradley, to be fair, over the last 18 months has done a really, really good job. They're very good to watch, even though they have not been at their high level, I suppose, in the last 2 or 3 weeks. John's right, they beat Bohemians fairly comfortably, and Bohemians had won 5 on the bounce before that. So they do deserve a lot of credit, Shamrock Rovers. Just on that as well, Stu, because we spoke a lot about the Irish thing and the lack of creativity, and obviously Jack, as we know, and I don't think he's been playing as well in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but certainly in terms of him being a creative force, maybe obviously for Shamrock Rovers and the added extension of the Irish team, should he be in the squad?
Oh, I thought he should have been in the squad, yeah. I thought he should have been in the squad based on his performances for Ireland, not for Shamrock Rovers. Okay. I think when you look back to even the previous Bulgarian game, which a game he completely changed when he came off the bench, we were awful in that game. We ended up winning, was it 2-3-0? 2-0? 3-0?
Set up the goals, yeah.
And so I think based on those performances, I was disappointed not to see him in the squad. We don't have a player like that. We just don't have that player that could pick your pocket. You know, in one way, we've been very lucky to have at least one of these players in the last probably 10 years with Wes Houlihan. And I think Jack is of the same ilk, different type of player, but certainly a player that you could bring on and can change the game for you. So we're underutilising these guys again. I'm surprised he wasn't in the squad. I'm still thinking there was a different factor involved, maybe with the league games going on or the European games. There was an issue over possibly quarantine, but obviously the Irish players got the special dispensation for that. So I was surprised to see that he wasn't in the squad. I think when you look at the deficit we have in midfield after these 2 games, I think Stephen may look at it again.
Because that is the problem area, isn't it, John? Obviously, we know the back 4 or 5 being very good. I know the struggle in a couple of games, but we're putting that down to the fitness issues and stuff. But that midfield area, there is room for Jack if he's on his game and what we need.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, he's like Stuart was saying, that little bit of vision, that little bit of class and the ability to pick your pocket or spot a pass. Probably, like, when you have players that have the pace of Connolly coming in from the side, or even Ida looked very isolated up front at times. But I tell you now, throw one at you. If I could have put one League of Ireland player into that team the other day against Finland, I would have put in Chris Shields before Jack Bourne, because I think that's the type of player they were missing on the day.
Shields, yeah.
Know what you think of that?
I think he's lost an edge. I think he's lost something in the last year. But I would have agreed with John a year ago, 2 years ago, definitely. And we definitely need that type of player that has that discipline and can just
book and play,
pivot. Yeah. All you need to do is just pivot passes, just bounce passes off each other. But it's a huge problem for him. For us, McCarthy isn't going to do it. Not to the level that I think Stephen is expecting him to do. Stephen's doing what he does. He's trying to build him a confidence. Yeah. I don't think it's going to work. It's as simple as that. And I think we need to look elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay, I watched the game on Friday night, Stu, Waterford and St. Pat's. the most bizarre game I've watched all season, right? Because St. Pat's actually started really well. So I'm sitting there thinking, and I fancied them going into it because I thought Waterford, they've struggled a little bit. Obviously, they hadn't won in four. And I'm watching the match. St. Pat's made a really good start. And next thing, about 24, 5 minutes in, a ball over the top, and there's a bit of a mix-up with Desmond and Brendan Clark, and Waterford score out of absolutely nothing. So it was a bit kind of against the run of play. You're thinking Pats might respond. 2 minutes later, to get a corner, another sloppy goal. John Martin kind of turns it in front of Clarkey. And I'm thinking, I actually remember saying to myself, sitting watching the match, how is this 2-0? It was just bizarre. Because Pats, without really causing a load of problems, but they had all the ball, they had a couple of chances, Georgie Kelly. But it just went from bad to worse, because the second half, you're expecting them to respond, and never really did. A couple of balls across the box, but it was an off night for Georgie Kelly. But you mentioned it there about the league table and how tight it is in terms of obviously third, fourth, fifth, but how tight it is in terms of maybe getting dragged down into that relegation stuff. And we watched Pats the first night we were back up in Dundalk, and we were raving about them. We thought they were excellent, and in terms of the potential for moving forward and what they may do with a lot of young players and with Stephen going in. But they've really, really struggled in recent times, Stu. They've only, since that Dundalk game, they've drawn 2 and lost 3. And they're in major trouble looking at it, just how bad they were the other night.
So that would be the worry. And the worry there would be that this isn't a regular, 36 game season, whereby you get off to a flat start or a good start. You tend to, during a 36 game season, you can have ups and downs, but you've got time to recover. They don't have time to recover. It's as simple as that. If you get into bad momentum now, you're in real trouble. There's 8 games left. Mm. So the next 2 or 3 games could put you in serious, serious trouble. And it's the same for everybody. So, and I think they know this, and it's you can see that the league is sort of changing all the time every week, because obviously with 3 points for a win, everything is so close. I mean,
what's
7 points are splitting.
Like if Pats were saying they're 8, but if they win, they might move to 4.
That's the way it is. Yeah. That's how tight it is at the moment. But I think everybody, from Forth down, from Waterford down to Finn Harps, they're getting a bounce out of the fact that if they win a game, it jumps them ahead, they get a bit relieved, then they get a bit complacent, they lose a game, they've gone back another 3 or 4 positions. So I think that's the way it's going to be. Outside of Rovers, Bowes and Dundalk, I think the real season is from far down.
Well, it's so achievable, isn't it, John, for all the other teams? And we weren't writing Waterford off, but we were praising them there only a couple of weeks ago. They've had a bad couple of weeks, losing the late goal against Finn Harps and that kind of thing. But even though I was saying it was a bizarre game, they were comfortable in the end. The second half, whatever Pats threw at them in the second half, they dealt with it comfortably enough and ran out easy winners in the end.
They did, yeah. But look, the point is right. I mean, like, Cork City are second bottom and at the same time 6 points off Europe. Do you know, it's absolutely nuts. And if any team from fourth down puts together a couple of wins back to back, it might be enough to lift them away. Do you know, but it's just a bizarre season. And like Stewie said, it's just like there's only, like, most teams now only have 8 games to go, and like the fact that like draws are almost worthless, at the moment, because you jump 4 and 5 places with a win. It's bizarre season, absolutely bizarre. And like, you don't have that recovery time. And if you're, like Stu said, if you're in bad form, like Pats are at the moment, it's so easy to get dragged into that bottom two. Weird one.
Okay, well, answer me this one, John. Was Cork City's 1-1 draw with Shelburne worthless on Saturday?
No, it felt like a win, to be honest. And I will, to the day I die, I don't know how we got away with a draw. Shells were comfortable, dominant, really. Cork City were very poor, to be honest. And then losing Alan Bennett to injury in the middle of it didn't help. Such a small squad, really, that you can rely on in City at the moment. And any tweaking or any injuries have a massive knock-on effect, because you're playing players out of position. You're trying to adjust your system and adjust your attacking the way, to readjust. And it's been disjointed in the last couple of weeks since Joseph Olu went off injured against, who was it? Derry, I think it was. Without him at the back, City have been looking very shaky, where they had been actually, their issue had been scoring goals. Now, without Olu in central defence, it seems to be, you know, being really shaky at the back. Like Mark McNulty had an excellent second half against Shells. Now, Shells didn't, you know, he made five or six saves. Most of them probably would have been, he would have considered them comfortable, would have been disappointed if he let them in, but still had to be making saves. But Deshaun Dalling's goal was bizarre. And I still not 100% sure what happened there. But Cork City's next five now are, they've Harps and Pats, which are the most important two. But outside that, it's Rovers, Dundalk and Bohemians. And they really need other teams now to be flipping up because they could be cast adrift very, very quickly.
The concern in your voice, John. Yeah, you obviously are very concerned and it's not getting any easier. As usual, they're Shamrock Rovers this weekend at home. And we look ahead to those games now, I suppose. You mentioned there that you need Sligo Rovers or somebody to do you a favour because they're playing Finn Harps tonight. I think Sligo Rovers will be Finn Harps tonight, and hopefully that will do Cork a favour, as you say. But the games at the weekend, Bows are at home to Waterford. Bows need to bounce back because even though we're kind of suggesting there the league is over, we want them to bounce back and try and push it out as long as they possibly can, Stu.
Yeah, I do agree. And I think Rovers will tighten up. They definitely will tighten up and they'll drop
points.
And
as John said, the European thing might be a bit of a distraction to them as well.
Yeah, it's just inevitable. It just becomes, you know, when you get to this stage of the season, it doesn't become, it's knowing how to win games when you get closer and closer to that league trophy. And it is, you know, when Rovers get closer and closer to that league trophy, there'll be a huge burden on them. There's no doubt about it. It's just natural. It happens to everybody. It's something that you have to just know how to deal with as a player. I've touched on this before when I've always spoken about it. The teams that win leagues are the teams that just maintain a level because everyone else drops off. You know, so if you can keep hitting those levels, it'll get you over the line. You have to know how to do that. So, it'll tighten up for them. I do think they have enough to do it, but it will tighten up for them. So it is important that Bows and Dundalk are still pushing all the way.
Yeah, Dundalk are at home to Shelburne and. Yeah, they need to respond. They obviously didn't have a game this weekend, so it might have been a bit of time for the new manager to obviously work with the squad there, get to know them a little bit better, Stu, because he only had that cup game in Cove. They're at home to Shelburne. Cork, as we mentioned, at home to Shamrock Rovers on Saturday afternoon. St. Pat's are at home to Sligo Rovers, and I'll be knocking on St. Pat's door again this week, and they better let me in this week, Stu, because I'll be heading along to that, hopefully. And there's a big derby on Sunday, Finn Harps against Derry. Just in the first division matches, and there's a lot going on in the first division at the moment, to be fair. John Caulfield got his first win, his first league win on Friday night away to Athlone to beat them 4-1 quite comprehensively. Bray had a good win. Bray have kind of reacted in the last couple of weeks now and to find themselves back in the hunt again. They had a good win against Cabinteely 3-0. The wheels have come off a little bit with Cabinteely after their brilliant start. I think they've lost their last three. Drogheda, a disappointing result for them at home to Cove, but again, we mentioned it a couple of times, Cove have picked up. I think that was their third win on the bounce as well. So they've put themselves into the hunt a little bit for the playoffs as well. They're sitting in six now on 14th. UCD beat Wexford 8-0. That's the same Wexford that I said, Wexford are going well at the moment. 8-0, Stu. How can you lose 8-0? I'm not having that. You shouldn't be losing 8-0. That's a joke.
I'm not having it.
Yeah, I'm not having that. That's ridiculous. Sham second team lost 2-1 to Longford. And again, it was a good win for Longford because that put them joint top with Cabinteely on 19 points. And it's very, very tight at the top, Stu. You have Cabinteely on 19, Longford on 19. Then you have three teams on 17, Drogheda, UCD and Bray, and Cove on 14. So it's exciting stuff in the first division. And there's games tonight, actually. Bray are at home to Athlone, Drogheda at home to Cabinteely, Shamrock Rovers second team at home to Cove, and UCD at home to Galway. So it's lively, the first division.
Yeah, I think the format, this shortened format has made things really exciting in the first division because there isn't a huge deficit of quality, well, with the exception of UCD and Wexford, but there isn't a huge deficit of quality. So,
in Wexford, yeah,
Athlone and Wexford.
So UCD are going great.
So you can see that it's so tight there. It's a shortened season. So it's very difficult for teams to get any kind of momentum and get a big lead. So you're always constantly being pulled back.
Okay, John's dog is barking. That means the end of the show.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure, John, as always. Stewie, a big thanks to Tony for coming in as well. heated debate. You can't beat it, Stu, but the Irish team are up and running. Give Stephen Kenny a chance. It will get better. It'll take time. We want change, and all change takes time. That's been episode 10. Thanks a million. Chat to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.